south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Here's an email from someone who attended my latest Expat Insider Seminar, and he's still down here. How about that? Nothing like drinking from the fire hose at a seminar and then spending a couple of extra weeks with your own boots on the ground. Nothing like it. So, here we go. And I'll paraphrase this a bit here. He says, "Hey, Johnny, I'd like to hear your thoughts on how you think Guatemala and specifically the Altiplano areas will do concerning global climate change and weather effects and all that. That said, do you feel the Altiplano areas will avoid most of the weather effects, or is it a big question mark? What do you think will happen if the people in the Altiplano have to go off to the grid for a week or two or four or 12? Do you feel the local water supplies and food supplies would hold up pretty well if the trucks stopped rolling for a few months or more? What about the, quote, road warrior-like gangs invading from the big city into the smaller, safer local towns and such? By the way, would you say a lot of the fruits, veggies, etc. in the markets are grown without Monsanto poisons in the soil and in the sprays? Or would you say that Latin farmers, too, are now using these ubiquitous substances? Just heard your most recent show, by the way, which was funnier than usual. It hit the nail on the head, though, especially since I've had the last 3 weeks of my own boots-on-the-ground experience firsthand. I've seen a lot of what you were talking about. Really? Then he uses the A word here. Couldn't resist using that A word, he says. Anyway, here's a cultural observation for you. Latins are, in fact, incredibly nice, kind, and patient. Could it be Valium and all the toxic poisons they buy and ingest from the countless tiendas? Or just something in their DNA and culture? Yet they're so thoroughly brainwashed when it comes to their glowing opinions about our U.S. fascist state. After all, they all really do want to be a part of it now, don't they? Anyway, that's just one of the many paradoxes encountered daily, as you well know. Then he closes out by saying, "Thanks for taking the time to answer more specific questions. I know you're often buried in email. No doubt it gets tedious answering the same or similar questions from hundreds of clueless and semi-clueless gringos. Signed, the AP Drifter." That would be the Altiplano Drifter. Well, Mr. Drifter, glad you're drifting along. That's really the only way to see what things are really like down here in Latin America. You can read the blogs and listen to shows and download international living seminars and such, but it's never like being here in person, face to face with boots on the ground. But I don't have to tell you that, right? And believe me, if I could tell you all the hundreds, if not thousands of times people with boots on the ground have said, "Hey, Johnny, you're absolutely right about so-and-so. That happened to me too." Never would have believed it if I hadn't experienced it myself. And sometimes, you know, I get emails from people saying they think I'm stretching the truth to get a laugh or to get a rise out of people. Then when they come down and get boots on the ground, they say, "You know what? I saw the same thing, or it happened to me too." People who do get boots on the ground, whether it's on or off the Gringo tourist trail, they know there's no need to stretch the truth. Things are very strange here in Latin America, almost always in a good way. So you can read about it or listen to someone talk about it all day, but it's the boots on the ground that matters. Okay, now, addressing some of those points from our Altiplano Drifter, first let me talk about the water here. Of course, all the rivers and lakes throughout the world are pretty much polluted now, unless you live on a mountaintop. However, I have to tell you that during the rainy season in Latin America, if you collect your own rainwater off your roof, and you can do it here, there's no law against it, and there never will be. That said, you'll certainly collect enough in 1 month to last the entire year. Of course, it'll rain a bit every day for 6 months, so theoretically, you'll have six times as much as you need just coming down on your roof. I know. It's more convenient to have a well or municipal supply, but what if the power goes out for a long time? If you have a big cistern, then who cares? You gotta love that, huh? Okay, then what about the effects of climate change? Now, whether you believe in human climate change or not, doesn't matter. Every country around the world is experiencing some kind of climactic shift, and since I've been down here 26 years now in Latin America, I've been able to see it firsthand, too. In fact, Latins who've never, ever been out of their own countries are talking about it too, especially some of the small farmers. They're saying that the rainy and the dry seasons are not quite as predictable date-wise as they once were. For example, ever since I've been in Latin America, people will always say on the 1st of October, the rainy season's completely over. That would be speaking of Central America. For South America, it's the reverse. So historically, everyone knew on October 1st, you could start outdoor projects, paint your house, trim the hedges, clean the dog poop off the lawn. Well, most gringos will anyway. That said, up to a few short years ago, you knew there'd be about 6 months of almost no rain. You could count on it. But, for example, this year, the first half of October, well, it was still the rainy season, which never happened the first 20-something years I was down here. So, unfortunately, that means farmers can't really tell by the calendar when it starts and ends. Yes, it's true. The climate is shifting and a bit more unpredictable, but farmers do roll with the punches. If anything, farmers always have a plan B or plan C. For example, none of the small farmers who make up about 85% of Latin American agriculture depend on one single crop for their livelihoods. Though almost all of them grow milpa or corn, they have a lot of other mixed crops. Squash, melons, tomatoes, avocados, mangoes, just too many to mention. And since in most of Latin America there's 3 to 4 growing seasons, that's why even at the small markets you've got massive varieties of fruits and vegetables absolutely fresh that you could never get in the markets up north. In fact, the last time I went through one of the big produce markets down here with a gringo from up north who'd never been to Latin America, before we even went into the place, when we were sitting in the parking lot, I said, take note of how many different fruits and vegetables that are new to you and you've never seen before in your life. And guess what? When we got back to the parking lot with our load, I said, how many were there? He said, how many what? I said, how many fruits and vegetables did you see that you'd never come across before in your life? And he said, oh, I quit counting at 12. And then he said, that's not even counting the different varieties of one kind of fruit or vegetable, like, for example, bananas, where I saw 4 different kinds. He said, where he comes from in Connecticut, the stores have only one type of banana, and he thought a banana is a banana. He never knew there were more than one kind. And you know what? Before I came down here, neither did I. Now, about that Altiplano region everyone loves so much, that it would be the region from about 3,000 feet to around 12,000 feet above sea level. Certain cities are strategically placed at those high elevation points, and they have what they call perpetual spring-like weather, which is why, unless you work in a stuffy business office with no ventilation, you do not need air conditioning or heating. So what's that worth to you? And you know, it always makes me laugh when I read a blog or see an article about some city, let's say Cali, Colombia, or any of the dozens and dozens of good-sized cities in the Altiplano. Why? Because every Altiplano city they write about claims to have the most perfect weather in the world. According to gringo and expat writers, that is. And they say it as if their new adopted town is the only place with that distinction. Well, how can that be? In fact, whatever Altiplano city you happen to be in, you'll always find signs and pamphlets that say just that. Quote, you are now in the land of perpetual spring, unquote. But did you know there are hundreds and hundreds of towns and cities that fall into that category. So, next time you're in Medellin, Colombia, don't send me an email saying, Johnny, it's got the best climate in the world, because I can name 150 other places where gringos and expats living and passing through say exactly the same thing. So, 3 cheers for the Altiplano. You just have to check it out. So then, what about global climate change? What's that going to do to people in the Altiplano who have that perpetual spring weather? Well, guess what? If the whole world on average gets a couple of degrees warmer, in many, maybe most, agricultural areas, it would be devastating. But when talking about Altiplano regions, you must realize, for example, that a city is really never on a level plain, even though the word Altiplano means high plain. Let's take Cuenca, Ecuador. As with all Altiplano cities and towns, the elevation varies quite a bit. Cuenca is all over the place, too, with parts of the city at 7,700 feet, rising in other spots to 8,600 feet. So, the city has its ups and downs with a spread of around 900 feet, depending where you are. And when you're at 8,600 feet in the higher end of the city, you'll find it's 2 or 3 degrees cooler than other parts. So, when people ask me about the climate in the Altiplano, I always say, within each city there are actually mini-climates, for a lot of reasons. One, because they're really not on a flat plain at all. Secondly, many of these cities that started out as small towns are now expanding, and so they have to creep up mountains or down valleys. That not only means that the neighborhoods and subdivisions are not at the same elevation, it means different parts of the city have got different wind, sun, and shade conditions, too. Let's take San Jose, Costa Rica, really the only city in that country that's in the Altiplano. For example, there's the wealthy district of Escazú, which is 400 or 500 feet lower than the district called Alajuela. So normally it's a few degrees cooler. And if you look at a topographical map of any one of these so-called Altiplano cities, you'll see there's peaks and valleys and hills and mountains all around in unpredictable places. So you're going to get those so-called mini-climates. Which is why in your particular neighborhood, it could be raining cats and dogs and driveway chickens. And just 6 blocks away, it could very well be sunny and dry as a bone. It happens all the time. You're driving along, it's absolutely clear and sunny, and suddenly, boom, it's pouring so hard you have to pull over for a while till it passes. Then you might run into someone later that day and say, "Wow, what a downpour today, huh?" And they'll say, "It rained? When?" Again, that's something you'll only experience if you get boots on the ground down here. And you know, I'll never forget the time, maybe 12 or so years ago, I was sitting down with some Latin girls and guys, and I said, "You know, I really can't understand why Latin TV stations have weather forecasters at all. I mean, you can't trust them up in the States, but down here, you'd do just as well flipping a coin. Especially during the rainy season. You've got sections of the city that are dry as a bone and others that are flooded and underwater. Who can predict the weather when you've got all these mini-climates?" And guess what? The girls laughed and they said, "Mini-climates?" Nope, they'd never heard that one before. To them, it doesn't matter if there's 5 different climates going on at once. They still need a weather person. Because, well, every TV station has one. It's tradition. Oh, and by the way, speaking of television weather forecasters, well, let me tell you this. In Latin America, all the competition in the hottie department on TV is for the weather lady positions. Nope, there are no weather men down here. They're all weather ladies, and they're all very hot. And you know, it's not like you need an IQ over 80 to do that job. Like I said, down here, especially in the Altiplano, with all these mini-climates, weather forecasters are batting 500. They're half right and they're half wrong. In fact, if Bush Jr. knew Spanish and had the right measurements, maybe even he could do the job. Whereas up in the States, to become a weather person, you have to have a degree in meteorology. That's a minimum. Down here, all you need to be is a young female with a certain look and a skimpy wardrobe. In fact, Latin guys will tell you, the only reason they tune into the nightly news at all is for the weather lady and the sports recap. And believe me, when I say it's the hot point of the television schedule down here, you really have to see it to believe it. You couldn't get away with that kind of stuff up in the States. So, bottom line, ladies, if you're going to apply for that job, you have to know Spanish and you have to have more curves than a roller coaster. However, if you're a gringa, you get an extra 2 points because you've got that gringa advantage. In fact, last time I was in Colombia, get this, they didn't have a curvy Colombia weather lady on one particular channel I tuned into. They had a blonde-haired, blue-eyed gringa. I could tell by her American accent. Oh, and by the way, to go off topic for just a second, like I never do that, guess what they call roller coasters here in Latin America? Montañas rusas. And that literally translates into English as a Russian mountain. Now, don't ask me why everyone calls it a montaña rusa. I can't get a straight answer from any Latin person. They just heard it from their parents, and their parents heard it from their grandparents, etc. And even when you're at a Latin amusement park and you buy a ticket to go on the roller coaster, it says right on your ticket, in Spanish, of course, "Admit one to the Montaña Rusa." Russian mountain doesn't make sense, but that's just the way it is. Okay, where were we? Oh yeah, climate change. Well, like I always suspected, the local farmers down here who have small little patches on the sides of mountains and hills, they have been complaining that the climate is changing. Yes, it's true. They are experiencing some disturbances in the way they've been growing things traditionally for hundreds of years. That said, not so long ago I was speaking to an indigenous farmer in a small market. I said to him, "I understand the last couple of years have been much drier than normal. Is that true?" "Yeah, for sure," he said, "on this side of the mountain," and he pointed to the side of a fairly large-sized mountain. By the way, you'd be amazed at some of the steep angles these guys can plant crops. But you know, since this is the richest type of volcanic soil in the world, they try to utilize every square foot of it if they can. Anyway, he pointed to a distant mountain where he said he grew his crops and said, "Yep, it's been very unseasonably warm." He said, muy, muy seco, no es normal, which means very dry too, and it's not normal. Then he said, however, my brother, who's got a parcel on the other side of the mountain, he's getting more rain than normal, but he's always been the lucky guy in the family, not me. No tengo suerte, él sí. So then how do you account for that? And in the end, he said, because it's been much drier on his side of the mountain, he's moved up the mountain where it's a little cooler, more humid, where the crops get a little more rain, too. So the farmers in the Altiplano know how to adjust their altitude to get the right mix. Not only that, he says they can switch crops. They've got dozens to choose from, each one growing under slightly different conditions. However, he did mention that some farmers are out of luck, the ones that have their patches of land at or near sea level. There's no adjusting for climate change there. You take what you get. Still, with farmland that's near sea level, if there are nearby mountains and valleys, they will have their climatic effect. By the way, that's climatic, not climactic. Climactic refers to, well, climaxes. And for now, we won't go there. Maybe later. Where were we? Oh, yeah. So, like the indigenous farmer said, some farmers have the luck of the draw one year, and they're SOL the next. The fact is, like he said again, farming was never a stable enterprise. Which is why he said farmers go to church, pray a lot, and drink a lot. By the way, he admits he drinks more than his brother. And he said they're always beholden to the government, who once a year hand out sacks of fertilizer. However, he said, they do win the lottery and get 3 or 4 sacks when it's election year. So they've become addicted to that kind of government corruption, and they know it. Bottom line, they vote for the guy that gives them the most fertilizer, which is a hell of a rotten way to run a small business, huh? But then again, that's what my old grandpa, a farmer up in Chicago, once told me. He said, during World War II, the government people came around and gave out subsidies for farmers to grow hemp for rope for the Navy and such. Then after the war, when DuPont took nylon and started making rope out of that, they paid you not to grow hemp. Which just goes to show there always were pus-brained, maggoty government types, artificially manipulating markets, even before most all of us were born. Which brings us to the fertilizer and pesticide Monsanto issue that our friendly Altiplano drifter mentioned in his email. So then are pesticides and Monsanto here? You damn right they are. But you see, the thing is, at those big open food markets where probably 95% of the produce is coming in from very small truck farmers within a 50-mile radius, the fact is these are very poor folks and most of them don't even have tractors. I'd say more than half of them use oxen, mules, and manpower. In fact, at the place I like to stay out in the coffee fields, I often see 2 giant oxen yoked together in a harness ambling down the center of a newly paved asphalt road. So you do see stuff like that out in the boonies. You got to be on your lookout because there's no streetlights there, which is why you don't want to drive at night. The ox will always win. Even those crazy chicken bus drivers, they'll screw with you and your Honda, but they'll never play chicken with an ox. Now, I doubt even 1 out of 100 of you listeners have seen a real live ox up close. I tell you, I never did either till I came to Latin America. Now, they're not scary and they're rather docile, but they do weigh around 2,000 pounds, at least the big ones do. Which just goes to show modern farming techniques have not taken over Latin America yet, although corrupt governments have gotten farmers used to those annual sacks of fertilizer. But still, it's nowhere out of control like it is up in the States. Sure, you give farmers free sacks of fertilizer and pesticides and they'll spread them all over the place. Remember, most of the small farmers have less than 6th grade educations. However, as far as going to the feed store and buying sacks of it themselves, well, you don't see that very often. Meaning, small farmers anyway raise their crops in a relatively unadulterated manner. However, I have noticed on occasion at the market, when looking at some fruits and vegetables, like for example papayas, you can tell they were sprayed with something because they have a slight whitish film on them. Now, you don't see that much, but still, I always peel my fruits and vegetables before I eat them. How about you? Oh, and another thing, recently I've seen some imported stuff showing up in the markets, like for example, kiwis and apples and nectarines coming in from guess where? Chile! Which now seems to be the Latin country that produces the most beautiful and symmetrical looking fruits and vegetables. So, agriculturally speaking, Chile, you could say, is the California of Latin America. Meaning, if you're in a Latin American Costco or Walmart, or even now in some of the big markets, if you want to buy beautiful looking, symmetrical, consistent oranges, apples, nectarines, kiwis, grapes, whatever, you'll find they have a little sticker on them that says they came from Chile. So, do I buy that stuff? Never. You don't need to. The local stuff is fresher, tastier, and obviously has much less fertilizer and pesticide contamination, if any. However, the size, shape, and color of your local vegetables and fruits will be all over the place. You'll see, for example, on the same vegetable cart, avocados that look like the size of plums and some that look bigger than your head. That goes for carrots and pineapples and sweet potatoes and everything else. The locally grown stuff, often misshapen and ugly, but tastes better than anything that's coming in from another country. And I bet it tastes better than anything you're eating up in the States, too. So, how prevalent is that produce coming in from Chile? Well, I'd say in the Central American markets anyway, less than 5%. By the way, it seems the number one crop export out of Mexico, besides ganja, is avocados. And you do know that if an avocado is coming out of Mexico, it's a Hass avocado, H-A-S-S, a special type. And they really are very consistent in shape and high quality, which is why people buy them. However, you have to know that when fruits and vegetables are coming in from other Latin countries to a market, they've been hit with pesticides and fertilizers, probably heavily. Why? Well, any of you listeners out there who've been through Latin American land borders or even through U.S. land borders to Canada or Mexico, you know they always make it a big point to confiscate your fruit and vegetables and foodstuffs before you cross the border. Just won't let you take it through. Why? Because they haven't been sprayed with the requisite amount of toxic pesticides. Which means when you're in a big Latin American market, don't buy anything that's got a sticker that says it's from another Latin country, because you know it's been most likely heavily sprayed. As opposed to the stuff grown locally, which thankfully makes up about 85 or 90% of everything you find in a market. So bottom line, avoid those fruits and vegetables that have a foreign point of origin sticker on them. Oh, and by the way, lately I've seen garlic in one of the big Latin markets that comes from guess where? China! And wouldn't you know it, it's actually the same price as the local garlic grown here, which is, by the way, dirt cheap. How cheap? I'd say 3 or 4 small bulbs for about 25 cents U.S. So then how in the world did that Chinese garlic get to Latin America, and who in the hell would buy it anyway? Well, for one, it comes in a very nice presentation and package. Two, it's very consistent. All the bulbs are the same size and the same ugly white color. And three, unfortunately, Latins seem to think anything that comes from the outside is better than the products they produce. Which is often true when it comes to manufactured products like stoves and refrigerators and radios and TVs, etc. But as for homegrown food products, I'm here to tell you they've got the whole world beat in price and in flavor. But if you want perfect-looking, symmetrical fruit that doesn't have much flavor, go to Walmart or Costco, or look for that foreign point of origin label in one of the big markets. Okay, I think that's more than enough about the food down here. And lastly, in our Altiplano Drifter's email, he was wondering about the possibility of road warrior-type street gangs from the big Latin cities invading some of the nicer small towns and suburbs. Well, for one, that's why no one should really live too close to a ghetto. Whether you're up in the first world or down in a big city in Latin America. But there is one big important difference between the bad ghetto areas and the rotten street gangs up in the first world and the ones down here in Latin America. The ones up in the first world have cars and guns, whereas down here in Latin America, some of them do have guns, but not many, and almost none have cars. That means if they're going to go invade an adjacent neighborhood or try to get to a nearby small town, they have to somehow get transportation. And when the feces hits the ventilator, for example, in the coming worldwide economic meltdown, chicken buses and public transportation will be at a standstill too. So how are they going to get to that nearby nice safe little town that's an hour away by car? Well, they're not going to march for 10 hours down the middle of a highway with their machetes and clubs. Which is why, by the way, nearly all the gang violence in Latin America is restricted to those bad neighborhoods. So, again, I wouldn't want to live in any city in the world where a really bad neighborhood was within maybe a half hour to an hour's walking distance. That should be a rule of thumb for anyone with a half a brain. Again, let me repeat. Those nasty gangland guys with the tattoos on their necks, they live in the big cities down here in Latin America, and they don't, I repeat, don't have cars or transportation, aside from public transportation and chicken buses. So when the next worldwide economic disaster hits and all countries are affected, some of the very first things to go down will be the internet and infrastructure, meaning public transportation. So down here in Latin America anyway, if the bad boys have a plan to expand out of their neighborhood, they'll have to do it on foot, Whereas up in the States, everyone, even the bad boys, have cars, don't they? How long would it take a car full of nasty guys to drive from the nearest ghetto to your house? Maybe you ought to do a test run, huh? Oh, and speaking of nasty-looking gang members with neck tattoos, I don't get it. Why do they always have Jesus, Mary, and biblical sayings tattooed all over their bodies? And don't say, Johnny, go ahead and ask one of them. Hey, I'm not that brave. Anyway, I never get to see guys like that in person, only on the nightly news and in the papers. Why? Because I live, work, and play far, far away from any of the places those guys hang out. However, the other day I was in a fairly upscale Latin mall, and sitting right across from me in the food court were a young Latin couple in their early 20s. The girl, dressed all in black, black eyeliner, black lipstick, black nails, a couple of eyelid and nose piercings, looked like a rebel girl whose parents had money. Yes, every once in a while you'll see some young Latin college types trying to copy that already passé first world goth trend. With real leather pants and a nice new black Metallica t-shirt, I figured her parents had dough. Like up in the first world, when parents have a lot of dough, sometimes a kid or two will rebel. But in this case, it was the girl's boyfriend that took the cake. Oh, they were a matched pair, and he was super goth, all right. But with a little added extra, he had those god-awful, painful-looking earlobe expansion hoops going. What an attractive look, huh? And this guy was no beginner. He had some big-ass hula hoop earlobes. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because I've been down here a very long time now, and that's the first time I've ever seen that in a Latin. Though, I have seen some low-budget European and American backpacker types with the earlobe thing going. So anyway, it seems lag time may just have arrived on another revolting development. Oh, and by the way, I picked out the accent on this couple. They were from, guess where? Argentina! And I can only guess that they were surely traveling through Latin America on their mommy's and daddy's credit cards. After all, they were 1,000 miles from home in Central America now and didn't look the least bit scruffy or backpackerish. Wait a minute, is that a word? Who says you can't make up your own words? I do it all the time. Someone's got to do it. Anyway, all the while looking at that goth couple, you know what I was thinking? If I was a younger, wilder guy, maybe I'd just walk over there, sit down, and yank on one of those hula hoops. Well, you can always dream, can't you? All right, we're getting towards the end now, so don't forget to go to www.thenewexpat.com and check out all the blogs and information. You'll find stuff from me and John Galt on that site. And don't forget to visit my Expat File YouTube channel. Do subscribe. It's free, you know.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.